We're joined now by Brad Schreiber, exceptional journalist in his own right. He covers the music world primarily. He's been with us before. His books include Becoming Jimi Hendrix, and it was, of course, 50 years ago that Jimi Hendrix died at the age of 27, and we're coming up next year, 50 years since Jim Morrison died at 27. It was this year also the 50th anniversary of Janis Joplin dying at the age of 27. Today, by the way, Brad Schreiber, before we get to John Lennon, Jim Morrison, born on this date in 1943, Melbourne, Florida. His last concert was in New Orleans, and he would have been 77 years old, and he died at 27. And with the Doors, he left quite a mark on the world at large as far as his immense talents, but a very tormented man, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, Jim. And one of the great poets, I think, in the history of rock and roll music. He, if I can use the phrase, really lit the world on fire, you know, with his beautiful poetry and his love of French poetry as well.
And Sammy Davis Jr., Lauren Hickman notes, was born on this date in 1925. He would have been 95 years old. The Candyman died in 1990. He was only 65 when he passed away, but he was, of course, a member of the Rat Pack, and what a career. And he was more than an entertainer. He was a groundbreaker in many ways as an African-American entertainer. And Sammy Davis Jr., I'm sure you smiled when I said his name. I can see his face right now.
Yeah. Yeah, he was throughout the media. You saw him everywhere. Don't forget, too, he had an interracial marriage.
To Mae Britt.
A lot of people
Mae Britt.
Mae Britt. A lot of people were not ready to deal with in America when it happened. But he was talented in so many different ways. Just a little aside, Jim, I remember as a boy listening to Sammy Davis records, and he would do impressions of other singers, and it would be spot on.
Well, he was a big part of my youth, and I suspect yours too. But Brad is also author of Music is Power, popular songs Social Justice and The Will to Change. And Sammy Davis Jr., as we know, was a cultural icon in addition to being a remarkable entertainer, and there wasn't anything he couldn't do. He was an actor, a singer, a dancer, and a comic, and he did it all very well. On this date in 1980, about this time, Annie Leibovitz was doing a photo shoot with John Lennon and Yoko Ono, the last person to professionally photograph John Lennon before he was murdered later that night outside the Dakota in New York City. He was only 40 years old, to be precise. He was one day short of 40 years and 2 months, and now it has been 40 years since he died. He's been dead almost as long as he was alive. And what a mark he left on the American cultural scene and the world cultural scene, native of Liverpool. He was the lead Beatle. How significant is he when we look back at the pantheon of great artists from that era?
Jim, I see John Lennon as being doubly important because the Beatles had such a profound effect on American culture. And their socio-political songs were subtle. There were things like She's Leaving Home, about children and parents not getting along, or, you know, Eastern mysticism in Tomorrow Never Knows. But then John Lennon, on his own with Yoko Ono and other musicians, he did incredibly in-your-face music. Don't forget, this is the man who wrote Working Class Hero, Keep You Doped on Religion and Sex and TV, and You Think You're So Clever and Classless and Free. He was a man who was incredibly bitter, lost his, he didn't have a father really, and then his mother was killed in an auto accident, and yet he was probably one of the funniest people, the wittiest people in the history of rock.
John Winston Lennon, born in Liverpool during the Second World War, October 9, 1940, the offspring of Julia Stanley and seaman Alfred Lennon. His father was present for not much of John's life, having been away at the time of his birth and frequently at sea during the years that followed. That marriage ended in 1944. Before we go to the break, let's hear Lennon's first single. He was still with the Beatles. This was 1970. John Winston Lennon in his prime.
This is
back after this brief pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Where were you 40 years ago tonight when John Lennon was killed outside the Dakota by a deranged fan, Mark David Chapman, who was found on the curb reading Catcher in the Rye when he was arrested, shot John Lennon twice in the back. John Winston Lennon lived for a few minutes but bled out before he got to the hospital. And with us to talk about it is Brad Schreiber, one of the best music authorities in the world, and he has quite a fan club himself. Anthony DeCurtis, a Grammy Award-winning journalist, author of Lou Reed, A Life, says Brad understands both music and politics as well as the jagged lines where they overlap. And John Lennon was one of the most well-known entertainment industry figures of the 20th century, achieved a level of mass adulation that had already grown to unwieldy proportions by the time of his murder. And he left a mark that goes way beyond his music. As you noted, he had an immense influence on culture itself, and he chose to live in Manhattan, the city that he died in. He loved New York City, and ultimately New York City was not so kind to him, to say the least. But what was it about him that in many ways was American? He loved his homeland, but he chose to be a United States resident, and at the time of his death, he was living the life in the Big Apple. Brad, what's your take on Lennon and his influence and his affinity for the United States?
Well, Jim, two-part question there. Any rock and roll star would have been happy to write one great peace anthem like Imagine. But Lennon wrote so many powerful songs that moved people and sociopolitically were important. Power to the People, Revolution, when he was with the Beatles. It goes on and on. I think Lennon really respected, well, he loved the energy of New York City, and he respected the fact that because there were a lot of famous people out every day in New York City, that there was, ironically, some sense of protection, some sense of people nodding, oh, look, it's John Lennon, and he'd say hello and walk by, and that would be it, which is, of course, the terrible irony of him being taken from us in 1980. The kind of thing, Jim, where you remember where you were. I think a lot of people do, much like the JFK assassination.
Well, John Lennon was a 21-time Grammy Award winner, all this by the age of 40. The Oscar was given for Let It Be with the Beatles, 1970, and he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as he should be, with the Beatles and himself, the Songwriters Hall of Fame. All of those recordings from that era say Lennon-McCartney. Some say McCartney actually did more of the writing. Is that fair to say that McCartney may have been shortchanged a bit?
I think they had an agreement which name would come first, and you could say it's fair because it's alphabetical. But on some songs, I think McCartney definitely had the lead. It's a fun challenge, but it's also something very beautiful that as a songwriting team, they didn't want one or the other to get credit. You mentioned Jim Morrison of the Doors. He had all four of the members of the band credited for every song, no matter who contributed. And that was quite a nice nod from Jim Morrison to do that, much like Lennon McCartney saying, no matter who wrote most of this song or that song, it's us together. And they were, of course, one of the great songwriting teams in music history.
All right. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org in our remaining time with music authority Brad Schreiber. And here was how it sounded on Monday Night Football. A few listeners have asked for the recording of Howard Cosell. There was a football game that night between the Patriots and the Dolphins, and just as the game was coming to a climax, John Lennon's death became news in the booth. ABC got it first because a producer was at Roosevelt Hospital. Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford actually had a mild argument over whether it should be on the air, and it was Gifford who said it should be, and Cosell consented, and here is how Howard Cosell announced it to the world.
Remaining, John Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard, you have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Howard Cosell, December 8th, 1980. And we've had Rex Reed, the film critic on this show, who's from LSU, of course, and lives at the Dakota now, and he did then, 40 years ago, and he states that he was the one who helped a police officer get Lennon into the back of a car. They didn't have time for an ambulance. And Brad Schreiber, he died on his way to the hospital. He didn't have a chance, did he?
No, and I was very fortunate, Jim, that I got to interview for Music is Power a lot of very knowledgeable people. For John Lennon, I interviewed John Scheinfeld, who is the director of The U.S. versus John Lennon, a wonderful documentary that makes clear how loved he was in New York City and how the FBI feared him because of his political stance. And it's a great insight into the last years of his life, and I would recommend it to your listeners, The U.S. versus John Lennon.
He blended mainstream popularity, which he had like few others, with avant-garde approaches to life and to his work. And that's a very difficult thing to do, but he accomplished it, didn't he?
Yeah. He, as I said in the beginning, Jim, he had this incredible blend of humanity and wit and utter bitterness and cynicism. And yet he overcame it at the end of his life. You know, working class hero became Imagine. Imagine all the people living, you know, for the day. And that's a kind of a remarkable growth in an artist. The way the Beatles adapted and grew and experimented is also true for John Lennon when he went solo. And it's another reason why he should be remembered very dearly today.
Well, Paul McCartney is still doing it. And he is a couple of years younger than Lennon, but at 78, he still performs about 2 hours or more when he's on stage. And he is very careful to pay tribute to his fallen partner, John Lennon. They had a relationship that had its ups and downs, but all these years later, McCartney knows what Lennon did for him and what they did for each other, and it is appropriate that he pays tribute to Lennon, and he does so with every show, Brad.
Yeah. Again, just a remarkable blend of talents. And it must have been devastating, you know, when they split up. It was for the country and the world who loved the Beatles, but also for McCartney. And I think that it's beautiful that he remembers him and that special teamwork that they had when he performs live. And one thing we can say, Jim, Paul McCartney was the hardest working of the Beatles. He loved the work. When others were sitting around going, oh, let's take a break, he was ready to go on to the next song, and his energy is still there, thank goodness.
Yeah, he has stayed true to his craft. He loves what he does, and he loves the adulation he receives, and he gets plenty of it. Hard to believe that they were in New Orleans performing in 1964, 56 years ago, and McCartney will probably return to New Orleans. He's been there a few times in the last few years, and he is not ready to stop right now. And Ringo's still alive, but he's not doing much, is he?
I don't know that he's touring at all. But, you know, he's earned his retirement. McCartney's just a force of nature, I think, constantly working and trying to broaden himself. And that's one of the things I appreciated so much about the Beatles and of course, Lennon, is that they never stopped trying to create new sounds. And many people would look forward to a new Beatles release as a cultural event, Jim.
Well, Brad Schreiber, thank you. And Music is Power is one of his books, his latest. And this man follows the music scene, past and present, like few others. Brad, it's always a pleasure. We'll call again soon. And a listener notes that we have not mentioned George Harrison, but of course he died about 20 years ago, and he was an amazing talent himself and has one of the great songs of all time in his collection. He wrote it and sang it with the Beatles, Something, which Frank Sinatra, I think, said was his favorite song at one point. The state of Texas has announced that it will be filing a lawsuit in the Supreme Court against four battleground states in an effort to halt presidential electors from finalizing Joe Biden's victory. Texas is arguing that electors from Georgia, with 16 electoral votes, Michigan, with 16 electoral votes, Wisconsin, with 10, and Pennsylvania, with 20, should not be allowed to cast their votes because those states, according to the state of Texas, unconstitutionally changed voting procedures during the coronavirus pandemic to allow for mail-in ballots. Imagine, Joe Biden won all four of those states. And he's ahead by more than 7 million votes nationwide in the overall vote count, more than George Bush beat Michael Dukakis by. What's going to happen? We'll follow it and talk about it tomorrow. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting and from Vantage Health Plan. Stay safe and stay tuned.